This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawera Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann, and I am joined by Mawera Karatai. In Whakatane, she is going to introduce one of her learners for that episode of Coming Up for Air. But first, how's your week going?
It's going great, thank you, Sam. How's yours?
It's going very well indeed. And who are we introducing today?
It is my great pleasure to introduce Atis Suksingh. Welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. How are you guys doing today?
All good, thank you.
All good. Where did you grow up, Atis?
I grew up in Thailand, but I moved to New Zealand when I was 16 years old. So back in 2016, basically. And been here ever since.
What was it for those first, like, for those first 16 years in Thailand?
It was an interesting time to be in Thailand, to say the least. A lot going on. Where should I start?
Start at the very beginning. It's a very good place to start.
Yeah. There's a lot of political stuff, well, nearly every year. But other than that, just spend most of my time in downtown Bangkok. A lot of things to do, but I mean, I would prefer staying home just because of the traffic alone. It takes me about an hour just to get to my primary school at the time, which is only like 5K from my house. But yeah, that's about it.
So a big change when you moved to New Zealand. Even if you were in Auckland, it would have seemed like a small place.
Yes. And that's what I love about New Zealand, to be honest. At one point, I got a bit, the city life is a bit too much for me and just want to kind of spend my time in a quieter environment where, and people here are a lot nicer than in Thailand. Like, not saying that it's bad there, but I can just strike up a conversation with anyone I've just walked by randomly, and it just makes your day a little bit better.
It does indeed. What did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, I have. When I did high school, I wanted to be a doctor. But then I think halfway through that, I realized that, you know, studying all the textbooks and chemistry and biology is not for me. I just got a bit sick of it, to say the least. And right now, I'm quite open to what I want to be in the future. But basically just want to work in a field where I can help as many people as I can. It might not be directly like being a doctor, but maybe I can just make their lives a little bit better.
What did you do your undergrad in?
International Business Management. Yep.
What led you there?
Ooh, so after I finished high school, that's when I decided to do a career shift. But in high school, I did the IB course, and I focused a bit too much on science. and I feel like I was lacking a lot of business knowledge. So went to do a college in hospitality because, you know, got to know what the people want and how to satisfy them first to be able to help them. That's just give me a really strong foundation. And I think the next step is to learn how to apply those knowledge to a bigger scale, especially, you know, international business. That would be a great place to start as well.
And you're doing now a master's in sustainable business. What got you there?
The first thing that got me interested in the topic is when I was doing hospitality in... I studied in Queenstown at QRC. And basically, they showed me... Well, I get to experience a lot of how those hospitality businesses operate and understanding the amount of stress that is involved and how some smaller businesses decide to take care of their employees. And it really shows me that, you know, sustainability doesn't have to start from just top down. It could just be a small scale project that you decide to start up one day, and it could develop into something much bigger than what you anticipated in the beginning. And I just think it would be nice if I could explore what it is and kind of spread this back to my home country or maybe other countries as well.
We'll come back to that. Let's take your music choice. Oh, we're going to the 80s. Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World. Why this one?
Oh, it's one of those songs I have in my 80s, 90s playlist, and I just like to blast them when I'm driving. And when you told me that I have to pick a song for this podcast, I was panicking a little bit, and I listened to through the whole playlist twice. And I think the start of the songs really plays into the global business environment, or just normal human behaviors nowadays, where we think we can control everything. Well, we try to anyway.
Welcome to your life. Bubble Sprite of the Forest of Orokanui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, ngā mihi aroha nui kia koutou ko tāhua hau. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day, who you are. A triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been so challenging. We've had to raise ourselves up constantly from a thick mire of unexpected travails. And I know that for myself, it has been a very grueling and difficult time that now I feel I have emerged from, tempered in the crucible of very necessary and inevitable changes. I hope that for us all, as we stand in the light of this new day, having shed the old skin, which did not fit any longer, and we stare out across a new vista to explore, we can see that those qualities that we have retained are the most precious of all, that have stood the test of time, and those trappings which no longer fit us or suit us, that we have returned to the earth, that we have dropped by the wayside to break down and compost and grow anew and feed the larger ecosystem, are in their rightful place and we no longer need to carry them. It is a fascinating process to be alive. It is a fascinating process to embody and to physically manifest and will manifest on this planet. And how wonderful that we can be here, that we can experience life so viscerally, so physically with our senses and with our consciousness, to take those experiences within and be moulded by them and mould them ourselves within us into something new. I know for myself, in the exploration of the living world as part of my work in environmental education for the last 21 years here in the beautiful Aughty Sporty Dunedin, I really, 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 really appreciate the beauty that surrounds me in every moment. This may be the beauty of a waving blade of grass. This may be the beauty of a collection of crumbled stone. This may be the beauty of a face wrinkled and smiling. This may be the beauty of a scent in the wind, the sweet nectar that we have at the moment at Orokonui drifting through the air. This may be the beauty of a song. This may be the beauty of the voice of a cicada singing. All of these things fill my heart with joy and hope that they exist, that they are here, and that they are the mere life, the mere result of a life, and unbeknownst often to that life form, their own beauty shines forth like a beacon, like a message. And this message helps me to feel reassured, to feel that there will always be beauty to be seen. That is just a fact of life. So I really hope for you, whatever's happening around you at the moment, that the beauty of the world is coming forward to you. That with these beautiful eyes and ears, nose, mouth, hands, the experience of life is richly fulfilling for you. And of course, being part of this show, is such a pleasure and privilege for me. So a huge thank you to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team for having me. And I'll talk with you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Atis Suksing.
Atis, your podcast interview was wonderful. Can you please tell us who you interviewed and why you chose them?
So I interviewed Liam Harrison, who is the owner of Pedals Dunedin. And I think the first time I've met Liam is back when I started this Master of Sustainability course earlier this year, where we visited his office and basically just talk about how his business model and how he operates. And it really it piqued my interest because I used to be I like cycling as well. And when I moved to New Zealand, I lived in Cambridge, which is a small town just outside of Hamilton. And I used to go cycling nearly 3 or 4 times a week. And it's just on empty roads. You get a few cars passing you at 100 kph sometimes, but it's not too bad. But then once I moved to Dunedin, I find cycling a bit scary, surprisingly, even though the cars are going way slower. But it's just city cycling is not the same, and having drains on the side of the roads where, you know, you're cycling is probably not helping as well. And I just think that since, as we all know, cycling is a really good alternative mode of transportation for sustainability. And I just want to know the perspective of someone who cycles more than any of us in this city. What can each and every one of us do to improve the cycling environment?
Perfect. We'll listen to this to your podcast now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to my podcast. My name is Atis, and today I'll be sharing some insights about cycling in Dunedin with an interview with Liam Harrison, the Managing Director of Pedals Dunedin. But first, let me tell you why this topic is important to me and how it could potentially help everyone out as well. Cycling has been a big part of my life. I used to cycle 50 kilometers every weekend when I was living in Thailand, and even after I moved to New Zealand for high school. One of the things I noticed after moving to Dunedin for university is that it is significantly more intimidating to commute by bicycles than I expected. A lot of research has found that there are many different benefits from cycling, extending beyond just environmental sustainability and improving social, financial, and health as well. Recently, as mentioned by many news articles from around the world, there has been a significant increase in cycling, especially cargo bikes, which Forbes has hailed as a last mile delivery solution in 2022. A research article about cycling in the era of COVID-19, published by Nikitas and his co-authors, found that when vehicle traffic is reduced and infrastructure is implemented, people cycle more, and it proves that a move away from car-centric cities is possible. So if this is possible, why is cycling still not as prominent in Dunedin as other cities? What is limiting it, and what can be done to improve the cycling environment? To help me answer these questions is Liam Harrison. Welcome, Liam. How are you today?
Kia ora. I'm doing very well, thank you. And yourself?
Good, good. And just tell me a bit about yourself, how you got into working here at Pedals Dunedin.
Yep, absolutely. So, as you said, I'm the managing director. So I launched Pedals in November 2022, having seen an opportunity in terms of Dunedin's central city being quite congested and a lot of roadworks, a lot of difficulty for traditional vans and cars to get around town. So I saw an opportunity for a same-day and urgent on-demand courier service that could get around roadworks, not need parking, and provide a really, really good quality service, all while being sustainable as well.
What was your inspiration in the beginning? Was it just because you like cycling, or...?
I'm definitely a big fan of bikes.
Yep.
I've been riding a bike since I was 5 years old. So I grew up here out in Kerry's Bay on the West Harbour. went to school here, studied at Otago, and definitely over the years I've seen the benefits of cycling. I guess there's benefits for cycling, in my view, can be personal for an individual, so health benefits, you save money, and you generally can get around town a lot better, quicker, easier, generally. Depends on what you're doing, where you're going, stuff like that. There are some caveats. But actually, there's also heaps of benefits for communities, and that's cities or even suburbs. Can benefit from a population that cycles. So I think that's obviously great for congestion, for those people who do have to drive, and reducing congestion on the road is great for them, reducing emissions for the city. But also there's an improvement to community resilience. Yeah.
How has the city changed since then in terms of, you know, the cycling environment?
I think there are incremental changes. We'll talk about the city and then the cycling infrastructure side of things. I'll kind of separate those out.
Yep.
So it feels often that the city hasn't changed all too much, but I think that's a huge understatement of actually there is some really cool stuff happening in Otipoti, Dunedin.
Yep.
Both in terms of like the business environment, which is obviously we connect in with a whole lot of businesses here. Cycling infrastructure is an interesting one here, where I feel that we have really good separated cycle, shared use paths. So if you think about the Harbour Loop, you can go all the way out to Port Chalmers, or you can go all the way out to Portobello, off-road, and that's a great asset to our city that people can jump on and use for commuting, but also lots of people are using it for the weekend and tourists are going and using it.
Yep.
I think it's really good. In the central city, I think there's a lot that can still be done in terms of infrastructure. There's a lot of missing gaps. Arterial routes are just on the road. There is no lane. There's no infrastructure at all. And I think that is detrimental to and discouraging for people who might consider using a bike to get to and from work, for example. I mean, that's a classic easy win for cycling is if people were to try it out as just a commuting thing. Save some money, get a bit of fitness, and save themselves from sitting in the car for maybe an hour a day.
Yeah, it's not that fun sitting in a car.
No.
Cycling is way more active. You get to enjoy the scenery and everything.
Absolutely.
And just moving on to what Pedals does, what do you guys do and how long have you guys been operating?
Yep. So we're a same-day and urgent courier service. And we use e-cargo bikes that have a capacity of about 90 kgs. We've been operating since November 22, so that's coming up to two years.
Yep.
Just shy at the moment. We work to basically support businesses here with connecting with their customers. Those could be consumers or they could be other businesses. Quite often it's other businesses, so we're doing like from a wholesaler to a retailer, for example. We work with a range of different industries, so we've got approximately 130 odd customer accounts, and that runs a really broad range of different industries from what have I been running today? You know, we've got bread from the bakery, we've got flowers, we've got dental models, we've got some engineering supplies and maybe some printing as well. And we're now at a point where cargo bikes are coming up and becoming much more viable as a solution for deliveries that are bulkier, larger than a document or an envelope. So we can cart big bulky objects like, you know, boxes of bread or like we deliver some kegs maybe or whatever. So it means that we can run a viable business that supports a really wide range of industries, like I've said, that sort of brings it into the modern day, I suppose.
You know, because Dunedin, some part is quite flat and cruisy, some part it's really hilly and quite a climb. So are there any, like, not specific areas, but there's definitely areas where you can't access because it's too steep, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I've taken these work bikes up Baldwin Street. I don't think there's much else steeper than that.
Okay.
but I guess I'd first of all, respond to that question by saying that I, from my experience living elsewhere and traveling, cycling around the world, is that Waitapuati Dunedin is actually like a really, really great city for riding bikes. Yes, we've got those very nice hills, you know, up there, and we've got Baldwin Street to claim. But actually, we've got the central city is really super accessible and flat, yep, all the way out through South Dunedin to the beautiful beaches in St. Clair and St. Kilda. Flat all the way, super accessible. You can go all the way out to Portobello without touching a hill. You can go all the way out to Port Chalmers without breaking a sweat, and yep, further if you wanted to. We have some amazing natural amenities that are all very accessible by bike.
Yep.
And yes, there are hills, but you know, they're not so daunting or so. There are always ways in which you can kind of nip away and find sort of cuts over them.
And the other thing that I find cycling downtown is, other than the two bike lanes on the State Highway 1, the side streets and everything, it's kind of difficult to cycle on because, you know, you have the drains on the sides and it's not...
I think the design and, like, better infrastructure should be implemented, like, just is a must-have if you really want properly safe streets on those busier roads. But it doesn't always have to be, you know, separated cycle lanes. There are a huge range of different, yep, ways in which street design can improve the safety of not just cyclists, but also pedestrians and also road, like cars, and make everybody's life a lot, you know, nicer.
Yeah.
And arguably, you know, we're seeing that with George Street. There's teething issues and it'll take a while for people to come around to the idea of, yep, some of those things. But slowing down streets, making them
mixed use
and yeah, giving people a place to experience outside of a car and thinking about other people than just cars is really, really crucial to making a much more inviting space for those other people.
In terms of the other streets in Dunedin, do you think that cars are going way too fast, or is there enough space for people to give you enough room to pass and everything?
I think a big part of it is empathy and consideration are often lacking when people are feeling stressed or, yep, in a rush to get somewhere. But it goes two ways. And I think road users, whether you're a bike or a car or a truck or a scooter, we all need to be aware of what everybody else is, you know, aware
of our surroundings
and respectful and considerate. I think definitely we have some good, you know, we've implemented quite a few 30K zones, but I think they're not necessarily adhered to very well.
Yep. And sometimes, you know, cars can go fast on some street and still be safe to cyclists as long as they give enough space. So it's not all about limiting the speed. It's more about, you know, having people respect each other and, yep, being considerate. And
yeah. Yeah. But also on those streets or roads where speed limits are higher, having the infrastructure in place to keep people safe, yep, as well.
Definitely, yeah.
The lower the speed limits, the lower the speed, generally the safer it is to have people mixed on the road. But as that speed limit starts to creep up, you want to get cyclists and other micro-mobility off the road, really.
Yep. And about just the general cycling environment in Dunedin, what are your current concerns, and is there anything that is affecting how you operate?
Affecting how we operate. I don't think there's too much affecting how we operate necessarily. Nationally, I think there's some pretty concerning stuff coming out of central government in terms of slashing of funding towards cycling and walking infrastructure projects, which I think is really, really not good in terms of the long-term view of ideally, we just want to see more people out on bikes. We want to see a greater proportion of our population riding bikes and being more active. And to continue reinforcing a dependency on private vehicles and cars and trucks and vans and whatever is it seems like incredibly poor planning.
You know, because as you mentioned earlier, cycling is one way of, you know, getting people to be more active. It's healthier. It's a good way to commute. It's sustainable as well. And cutting the funding to these infrastructures obviously impacts everyone. But do you think it could potentially create more problem in the community? Maybe there's more traffic or, you know, the health impact of these funding cuts?
Yeah, well, I think if you were to look at research around the benefits to cost of cycling infrastructure, you would find that there is a benefit to cost ratio of 10 to 1.
Oh, wow.
Compared to any roading project, which is one or less. And that is because people are healthier, so they don't spend, or they don't cost the healthcare system.
Yep.
They save money because they're not spending money on fuel. So they're better off. So they have money to spend on other stuff, often spent at local businesses, which goes better, closer around in the economy. They're reducing emissions. And ultimately, they're connecting better with their communities, which all reduce costs to society as well as improving the productivity of our country. Because people are healthier, they're generally more productive. But if you just continue to invest in infrastructure for cars and private vehicles, you're ultimately just going to keep sinking money into a hole that's going to lead to people being dependent on cars. So congestion continues to grow alongside emissions, the population. Emissions just go up. You don't do anything with emissions. And I think people get, they're less healthy and they're disassociated from their community.
From our discussion so far, it's probably fair to say, you know, the government plays a huge role in promoting or, you know, maintaining cycling infrastructures. Road users, including electric scooters, cars and bikes, and everyone plays a role in creating a safer environment that everyone can share and enjoy. So, but overall, which player or stakeholder can, you know, create the most significant change in the current cycling environment?
Well, that's a very big question. But I think ultimately there is no one kingpin or one person who can,
that's a good answer,
you know, bring about change. I think we all need to do our part. And I think that the funding model from central government is not great. But local councils and you can, you know, as an individual, you can go and contact your political representatives, whether that's local or central government, but also just getting out and riding bikes. And what I like to do with the, and what I like the Pedals Dunedin team to do is to be the best ambassadors for cycling that we can be by engaging, being very friendly and smiling and waving and acknowledging, yep, other road users, whether they're on a car, in a car or on a bike or whatever, trying to be as considerate, as you say, and but yeah, generally just sort of not going down that path of conflict and of them and us and all of that stuff, because, yep, I think that just leads you towards a deadlock where you don't actually make any progress. I think there's a whole lot that can be done today and over the next few years that would make a huge impact, and I like to think that we're in some way, in some small way, involved in promoting and encouraging more people to get out on bikes.
Yep.
But also for decision makers who have, you know, purse strings that they're in control of, to maybe direct some more funds towards better infrastructure for cyclists to keep them safe and to make our cities and suburbs more livable.
Yep. And overall, of the entire Dunedin area and where you operate, would you say that it is, the design is a bit too car-centric?
Well, I would say that it is very car-centric, but I don't think they've necessarily struck the right balance, but it's a tricky one. Where,
let's say, if of all the cities in New Zealand, which one would you say has the best cycling infrastructure? What would be the model city?
The model city. Historically, Christchurch was always the cycling city, because it was so flat and the roads were so wide. Post-earthquake, during the rebuild, they've intentionally built a lot more cycling infrastructure into the city's network, which I think is fantastic. I think what is interesting is the past couple of years, Wellington has built a very impressive amount of connected, separated cycleways that completely changed the face of a lot of those arterial routes. And they've seen, they learned some really cool lessons about implementing temporary infrastructure with sort of plastic, we don't like plastic, but, you know, plastic separators and things like that, so that they could effectively test new cycling infrastructure before they actually spend millions of dollars on them. And they saw a huge uptake and an increase in number of people riding bikes. The evidence base is there, and I think the more and more cities are starting to get into building more infrastructure. So,
yep.
Yeah.
And just one final question, just to close this off.
Sure.
If everything's remained the same in New Zealand or Dunedin, would you expect to see an increase or decrease in the amount of people cycling?
Well, if I had my way, then increase, I think. I think we're looking at a really tough time economically for a lot of households.
Yep.
I've just been talking about this today with somebody else, that as I mentioned earlier, cycling, not only is it great for your own personal health and for emissions and for community, but it's also like just a great cost saver. When we're looking at a household's monthly budget, you'll see a significant line item will be the car.
Yep.
And if people are looking at cutting costs and maybe thinking about the sustainability aspect as well, bikes are going to become more and more of it, because it's a very straightforward answer to a lot of problems,
yep,
a lot of questions. So I think we're going to see it continue to grow, but not without, you know, great support from a lot of different areas.
All right, perfect. I think that sums everything up.
Awesome.
Thank you for your time, Leon.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Aegis, that was absolutely fascinating. What was your big takeaway from your podcast interview?
The thing that I find most interesting during the podcast is when he mentioned that cycling infrastructure is not the answer for everything. It's more about, in terms of physical structure wise, it's building roads that are safe for cyclists and motorists as well. Having all those warning signs, proper surface, and basically the controlling factors to prevent people from going too fast on those roads. And in terms of behavior factors, where it's about understanding each other, being mindful of their existence, and just staying calm and composed, you know, give way to other people, being nice in general.
It's hard to change that behavior, and because I'm a cyclist as well, I love riding my bike, and one of the problems I have is that cars always underestimate my speed, and they always think they can beat me through a roundabout or beat me through an intersection, and which makes me have to stop or get run over. And it's really hard to get cars to accept our presence on the road. How do we do that? How do we get that behavior to change?
Oh, that is probably the most difficult questions for every country in the world, because it doesn't matter where you are. You look into the community post as well as, you know, social medias, you see content, it's always us versus them. Like cyclists versus motorists, and the other way around as well. But I think in the end, I can't really give you a definite answer on how we can start the change, because it really have to come from all of us at the same time. But you could build a community. I think the other way around is you can grow the community of cyclists, get people who maybe exclusively use cars to try out cycling as well. So then they know that these are the limitations, these are the benefits of it, and the next time they're driving, they know that's how fast I can go, this is how dangerous this could be, and the other way around. Because I think, well, obviously I started cycling before I started driving, and getting used to cycling as a kid, and when I started driving, I think I'm way more mindful of people on bicycles and pedestrians as well, because coming out of maybe a T-junction, I always just look both ways like 3 or 4 times just to be careful, because maybe I missed something the first time.
And you have to be careful, don't you? Because It is when it comes to your body in a car, you're always going to come off second best.
I have experiences with that.
Oh, yep, that's not good. Yeah. Well, we're very lucky to have you with us then. So if you think about that interview that you had with Liam, what will you take from that into your professional practice going forward?
I think one aspect that is interesting is when we discuss kind of the relationship, who is the initiator of change. And he gave a straight answer. He basically mentioned that there's no specific initiator in this case, in the case of cycling infrastructures, because every parties have to be involved, and it's about engaging the different communities, different agencies, and just creating a grassroots understanding and projects to kind of brings everyone together. It's not that, oh, I can't do anything, we'll wait for the government to do something. It's about bringing everyone together and working on the problem together.
Hmm. Is this something that you think that, is this where you're headed in your professional life, do you think? Is this where you go from here after you finished your master's?
That is hard to say, because I don't have like a set plan for my future. I'm just open to every opportunities out there. But in terms of how I'm approaching my master thesis, my goal is to kind of create something, explore a way where I can bring all the different stakeholders to work together on a specific problem.
If I was the job fairy and I could wave my magic wand and make your perfect job ahead of you, what would it be?
Perfect job ahead of me. If it's... Oh, that is hard. Can you make me Prime Minister of Thailand?
Sure.
Yeah. Yep. That'd be good.
You're the boss now.
Yep. That'd be great. Yeah.
Are you interested in...
Hang on. Slow down. When you're the Prime Minister of Thailand, what's your platform?
Ooh, I haven't thought that far yet, actually. I am interested in politics to the point that I don't want to get involved in politics. But I just think that, I'll try to not go too political here, but basically, in a sense, I'm not saying I could do better, but I think having younger generation, maybe not as prime ministers, but like in position where you can influence their decision, could kind of change the global climate right now, I would say. Yeah.
What's the smallest change that you could make, perhaps in Thailand, that would have the biggest impact?
Oh, smallest change, huh? I would want to increase the income for most of the farmers. That's something I have been looking into back in the days. And it's a whole system where, let's say you produce a ton of rice, whatever, you get, for example, the farmer gets only 100 baht, the company that sells the rice gets 1,000, and the supermarket's tens of thousands. It's not fair in any way. And I just think there has to be a better way of doing this. And it's more income, more opportunities for them, and it just makes everything evolve better. Food security as well, yeah. That's not really a small change, is it? Sorry.
That's a great change. One thing I've noticed about young people who want to go into politics, the thing that makes you different from politicians is that you want to go into politics to make a change. They want to go into politics to get re-elected. So that all they're thinking about is how do we get re-elected, and you're thinking about how do I make change. And that's why you should be the Prime Minister.
Oh, I know a few people who disagree with that. Nah, just kidding. Yeah, it would be nice. I mean, not everyone is the same, and maybe when I'm in that position, my approach doesn't work and I just get kicked out straight away. That might happen, but you know, just being able to kind of have some impact on the world and change it for the better is good. Any kind of change is good for me. Yeah,
you talked about in Queenstown, looking at those hospitality businesses and the way that they were doing things and taking care of employees and perhaps the environment. And you initially thought it'd be good if we could spread that to Thailand, to Southeast Asia. Now you have been working on the Masters of Sustainable Business. Has your ideas changed about what you might want to take back to Thailand?
One of the change is that some of the stuff I saw back in 2020 is now kind of slowly globalized into countries in Southeast Asia as well. So I start seeing some of those sustainable practices, but not to the scale that is equal or equal to New Zealand, but it's a developing sector for sure. But the other thing that I don't think there's anything specific, but one thing that stands out in New Zealand is your approach to sustainability, where it's, in my opinion, really honest and kind of straightforward, where this is where we want to get to, this is what we are doing for it. And it just seems way more clear-cut than what I've seen in Thailand before.
Do you think it's possible to adopt what New Zealand's doing? One might argue that New Zealand is the lucky recipient of a very low population and an environment that we've only had, you know, less than 200 years of European, at least, ability to exploit. Whereas Thailand's been, you know, has had a lot of people on it for a long time.
Yep.
Do you think that the things that we do would translate?
It would be a lot harder to get everyone on board. Basically, there's no way I can propose a value proposition that is attractive to everyone. And that's probably why why Thailand is a lot different from this in this aspect. But I don't think it's impossible. I mean, at one point, everyone will have to kind of either understand or accept that we must push towards a more sustainable economy and way of living, because we can't continue to consume and produce this much. There's just no way. I don't think any calculation can prove otherwise. Yeah.
I have some questions to end the show.
Yep.
What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
Well, that is a hard one. Success in terms of
anything you like.
Anything I like? I would say completing the bachelor degree was one of my best success so far. It was an interesting moment because it caught me off guard, because I actually planned to do it in another country as well, but then I got stuck in New Zealand because of, not saying it's a bad thing, but I was stuck here because of COVID and decided to just pursue it here. The other thing would be, I haven't finished my thesis yet. I think that will be the next one, but we will see how that goes. Other than that,
that's all right. What's your superpower?
Superpower? I would say the ability not to think too far ahead, not stress about it too much. I try not to plan anything more than a year ahead, because then if something changed, like COVID-19, or maybe there's a new global situation, whatever, I don't get disappointed with what happened. I try to keep my schedule flexible. I could basically fly out of here tomorrow and I'll be ready and to take on anything, yeah.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
Not really. I'm not actively doing activist activities. That's a weird sentence to say. But basically, I have a certain view and approach to solving problems. I don't force it on other people, but I try to share my opinion and perspective with them whenever I can, just to see if they like it, sure, that's good. If they don't like it, I don't mind. But yeah.
Do you have a go-to definition of sustainability?
The go-to one would be nearly the same as the UN-defined definition to sustainability, which is basically using the resources now and not compromising the future of other generations. But the key difference is to remind myself that it's not just environmental resource, it's financial, it's social as well. It's basically the foundation of our civilization. We can't run out of those, and or else it would just be chaos, basically.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Ooh, advice. I would say, first of all, if you have not tried out cycling, go do that. It's really fun. It's good for your health, and you get to meet a lot of interesting people and have really fun conversation. the other thing is just once in a while take a look back in how you're living and just make a quick evaluation of the time you spent, how much you've been working, and just the amount of trash or waste you have produced, and just maybe find ways to minimize that in certain way, in some way. Maybe you just want to cut down on single-use plastic. Maybe you realize you've been working too much. You should spend time more with your friends and family, or maybe spending too much. You should probably open a new saving account and dedicate $20 in there every week. But yeah.
Thank you for that. Moira.
Oh, that is some very good advice right there. Especially both Sam and I think work a little bit too hard, way too hard. It's a good reminder that we should spend more time doing things that are fun. And I love riding my bike, so I don't need to be reminded about that. Thank you very much for what this has been a really wonderful interview. Thank you also very much for your contribution to our classroom time. You're an incredibly positive person with a great perspective on life, and that comes through in all the activities that we've undertaken in the classroom. And I'm super excited to read your thesis when it's ready. And I just want to wish you all the best for the journey ahead, and just keep being you, because you're great.
Thank you.
We are going out to the Beach Boys cycling song, It's a Beautiful Day. Listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world, brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. Moira Karatai was here introducing Atis Suksing for his contribution to Coming Up for Air. He brought to us Liam Harrison. I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Atiwa.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.